Here comes another edition of Talking Fußball, the Bundesliga show, your source for all things German football. I'm your host, Matt Herman, and this week, I'm speaking for myself here, I'm still buzzing from a game between top sides that I felt really lived up to expectations. With me, as so often, are Terry DeFellin. Hello.
My buzzer is fully charged, Matt, and I am good to go. How are you doing?
Very nice. I like to hear about those buzzers, joy or otherwise. Nick Wildhagen is also in the house.
Hi there. I just come from a celebration. My son celebrated his 6th birthday today, so I'm still buzzing from all the cake.
Dynamite. Yeah, you eat the sugar high,
yeah.
In your case, unlike the usual cup of beer that we see you with. I think you've probably had your fill of cake and ice cream or what have you.
I'm having my beer too, you know.
Oh,
I'm,
very nice.
I mean, like Marin Antonat, I'm give me beer and I'll drink it too.
Very nice. Yeah, I mean, the game I'm referring to, of course, is Leverkusen and Dortmund's draw on match day 13. We'll be talking about that game. We'll be talking about sort of the diverging fortunes of a few other teams, as well as taking a look ahead at the DFB Pokal games, which are coming up this week in just a moment. Remember, you can always get in touch with us anytime. Just send us an email, podcast@talkingfußball.com. We love it when you review us nicely on Apple Podcasts. It's a big help for folks finding us. And if you want to keep the show afloat, please do support us on Patreon. Lots of great timeless content over there. It'll take you through all 6 decades of Bundesliga history. All right, here comes part one of Talking Fußball. The part where we talk about basically the biggest story, the biggest game, what have you, of the week. I think the biggest game is the one that I referred to in the intro. That is, of course, Leverkusen and Dortmund's clash. It resulted in a little bit of movement in the table. A little bit less than it could have been, I guess, if the weather had cooperated in Germany. The league leaders, of course, Leverkusen, they dropped points. It was a 1-1 draw, as you probably know by now. But, you know, their number one challenger, FC Bayern München, were denied their chance to make up ground and, you know, pull level with them. After a record December snowfall in Munich. I mean, I think it was something like 45 something centimeters, 17, 18 inches, pretty crazy snowfall. Not terribly surprised that they didn't manage to get a game off between Bayern and Union. I guess, though, considering Union's recent form, maybe they appreciated it. What do you reckon?
I don't know. I mean, it's basically sort of a two-edged sword to start off for a new coach against Bayern Munich into, his Bundesliga stint. I mean, a lot of times teams or clubs have actually decided to give coaches who are like lame ducks that one match against Bayern because they don't want to give the new guy a start against Bayern Munich. I mean, this, for instance, happened with Joe Zinnbauer at HSV. I mean, lots and lots of examples of, teams suddenly playing some decent football, only losing narrowly, and then a coach getting sacked after all because the decision's already made. Only thing was they didn't want to start the new guy off against Bayern. So having said that, I mean, it's one of those matches where Union in particular have nothing to lose. It's a freebie. If they get a point, wow, what a start to his coaching career. If they lose 5-0, well, what do you expect? It's Bayern Munich.
Yeah, since we've mentioned him by pronoun, but not name yet, let's talk about Nenad Bjelica for just a second. A bit of an offbeat choice, I guess, but that's, Union Berlin tend to go looking in some unexpected places, not just for players, but for coaches as well. And they, of course, got not the best results in Europe at midweek, but they didn't notch up a loss. So any thoughts about what this guy might bring to the table? I mean, I look at his resume, and I don't see a lot of teams that I know very well, the likes of Lech Poznan, Dinamo Zagreb, Trabzonspor. I mean, these are big clubs in small leagues, for the most part.
Small club in a big league now.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. How will he adapt?
I can only assume that there's been some kind of data at work here, and that they've looked at the way that he manages and sets up teams and figured that he's compatible with the players that have got there. Because, I mean, I'm not familiar with any of these teams and I'm not familiar with his career at all, so I can't offer any more insight than that. But looking, as you say, Matt, looking at his managerial career, no Bundesliga experience, no big club experience, so there has to be some connection somewhere. So the logical choice would be is that they've gone to the data and figured this is probably what he can do. So who knows, really? I mean, it might well be an absolutely inspired choice. But increasingly, we do see this, you know, football clubs looking to the data to pick coaches. And that's actually probably a more sensible strategy. But of course, you know, sensible on paper or on the screen, but we'll see what happens on grass.
I mean, Union Berlin, the sporting leadership there doesn't strike me as, you know, a bunch of guys who are really, really unprepared.
No, I'd agree with that.
They really do their research and, you know, they know what sort of squad they've got on their hands. So I think they probably thought that they have to find a coach who is a fit for that squad for the current players who are in there.
Yep.
Because yes, they are going to spend during the winter transfer window, but they're not going to, you know, do a complete overhaul of the team.
No, I think they should have earned a little bit of trust by now, Union, with all the sort of rough diamonds they've found on the player market in the last several years. And the fact that they pulled Urs Fischer out of not total obscurity. I mean, he was a successful manager down in Switzerland, but he was not somebody who was on a lot of Bundesliga club shortlist at the time. So I feel like I'm willing to think this might be a good move.
I mean, the guy's a German speaker.
True. He played at Kaiserslautern for a few years.
And had some stints in Austria as well, I think, in Wacker Tirol or something.
He managed Austria, Vienna as well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So there you go. I mean, the guy speaks German, so he knows the culture, he knows the language. Two big pluses. I mean, the other name that was really discussed and, you know, the first messages that came up on the day the announcement was made that, hey, we found a new coach. The first guy who was supposedly signing for Union Berlin was actually Raul. Who I've, despite having played for Schalke for a couple of years, who've never seen giving an interview in German at all. So, you know, I don't know how strong his German knowledge is. But Bellinger, he does know German, he does know the culture, and that in itself is probably going to be an added bonus. And, you know, we mentioned the start into the European campaign for him, and you have to say that this really just came down to the fact that an individual mistake was made. Robin Knoche had some week under, you know, first he misses that penalty against Augsburg, then he misplaces that pass against Braga. So really, you could say that Robin Knoche has cost Union Berlin 4 points over the last two matches. So I guess he's not sleeping well currently, but at least he didn't have to play against Bayern this weekend.
For sure. Yeah, we'll probably be looking for that fixture to happen sometime in January as things turn out. Apparently, it's, you know, sort of an agreement between the DFL, who runs the Bundesliga, and the DFB, who runs the DFB Pokal, that makeup games in the Bundesliga will not take place at the same time as DFB Pokal games, which, of course, we have at midweek this week. So they're going to have to put that game off until January, despite the fact that neither one of those two teams, Bayern or Union, are still in the Pokal. Let's move on. Let's talk about that big game between Leverkusen and Dortmund that just, you know, took place not too long ago on Sunday. I guess there's been a bit of a turnabout over the last couple of weeks since we talked when we were questioning BVB's mettle after some pretty worrying results. Good form in the last few. They got a big win against Gladbach. They went to the San Siro in the Champions League, you know, basically threw Milan over like a rag doll. Serious wind in their sails going into Leverkusen. Leverkusen, of course, had been on top of the league just about all season. And at least in the early going, things looked great for Dortmund. Julian Ryerson, 5 minutes in, got the first goal for Dortmund, which really changed the complexion of the game. Dortmund were pretty much happy to hold their nerve without a lot of sort of risk in the game. I mean, they had their chances on the counter, but did not devote all that much resources into going forward, certainly not as much as Leverkusen did. And Leverkusen really labored to make their possession and their attack sort of pan out. It took them, I guess, until the 79th minute to get the goal that they needed to tie the game. Victor Boniface swept in a pass from Patrick Schick, who had just gotten back into the game, his first Bundesliga game in some time. Terry, I feel like, at least for a Dortmund fan like yourself, despite this was maybe a missed opportunity to get a win, I feel like this was a really well-earned draw, and earned in a way that I felt maybe proved a bit of a point about a way that Dortmund can play when they're on their game. You know, basically holding on to a lead or holding on to a draw without sort of losing control of the game.
Yeah, I was impressed with Dortmund's approach, and I'm very happy with the result. I mean, when you look back on it, you do think, obviously, you concede a relatively late equaliser. And you think, oh, well, we know if they could have held on and got 3 points, that would have been amazing. But I think that's how it would have felt. It would have been an amazing result if they got the 3 points. But I think, you know, Dortmund should be really happy
to have gone to the best team in the country at the minute and got something from them. I thought that, I mean, Dortmund pushed their luck a lot, but, you know, you've got Wirtz and Hoffmann sort of like, you know, going through the middle and occupying those half spaces. And then you've got the two wing backs who are just hell-bent on getting behind the defence. There's so much going on there. The Dortmund defence is being pulled around and apart by that Leverkusen attack. Inevitably, Dortmund are going to give the ball away. Inevitably, they're going to get somewhat stretched and they're going to have to resort to last-ditch sort of like, you know, interceptions and last-ditch tackles. I thought that Mats Hummels was an absolute god in that respect today. Absolutely fantastic. But if you look at it objectively and say, well, this is no way to win or defend a league, but really, you know, they're human beings. This is just how it's going to be. This is football. You know, Leverkusen played, I think, with such confidence and such belief in their ability that they were at times pretty irrepressible. And I thought Dortmund, you know, really, you know, they had to push their luck, but they kept their shape as much as it was possible to keep your shape. And I think they kind of earned their luck that way. And it felt more like this season's Champions League Dortmund playing rather than this season's Bundesliga Dortmund playing. And that's possibly why there was a bit more coherence. And I think it was quite refreshing to watch Dortmund in the Bundesliga where they don't feel as though they clearly went out there thinking, we're not going to be able to outplay these guys. We go at these guys toe to toe, they're going to beat us. So we have to acknowledge that as an attacking threat, they're better than us. So we set ourselves up accordingly. And it was gratifying to see it almost come off. And certainly, I think it's a big scalp. It would have been a statement win for Bayer Leverkusen, I think, if they'd have got something from that. And I hope for the sake of a healthy title race that it doesn't knock their confidence.
I mean, how important is it for Dortmund, though, that they finally managed to get, you know, a result against a top table side? Because, I mean, against Stuttgart, who, by the way, I think have beaten their record to 30 points in earliest time in the season in their club history, is their best start ever. They lost against Stuttgart 2-1, and we talked about that last time. That looked more like a 5-1 match than a 2-1 match. They lost 4-0 against Bayern and were absolutely whipped in their Clásica, annihilated, really. You know, now they faced another, you know, top four side, but this time around, they actually managed to get the early goal and then managed to defend it rather well, from the sounds of it.
Yeah, so they, as I said, they did push their luck a bit, Nick. On another day, I think they could have conceded 2 or 3. But, you know, again, if you play right shape and you stick to your plan, then you get rewarded, I think, with a bit of luck. I think this is a result that helps Dortmund's confidence a lot more than perhaps it helps Leverkusen's. I think Dortmund can be pleased with the fact that they've gone there and they've got something. So I think it will make a difference. I think in terms of, like, I don't know, because I don't really know what the mindset is. I mean, Dortmund have been playing some really good football or been getting some really good results in the Champions League. And I don't see any reason why they shouldn't feel happy about a lot of what they've done this season. I just think that they struggle to field two teams a week. I think that's the issue there. But I think in view of the great result in the San Siro and then to go to Leverkusen and get something, I think is pretty meaningful. And I think that, you know, you'd have to be particularly miserable to be an unhappy Dortmund fan at this point. I think you should be pleased with it.
I mean, the trend is your friend in that regard, because, I mean, when Dortmund had that start against PSG into the Champions League campaign and, you know, the group there at Newcastle, AC Milan, certainly not minnows of European football. I mean, I watched Newcastle playing against Man United last night and they absolutely crushed them as well. I mean, Newcastle looked like they should have won that match 3 or 4 nil, really. United being as useless as ever, really. But this is not a Premier League podcast. But yes, I mean, qualifying for the next round with one match to spare after that start, that must have been quite gratifying as well.
Watching Dortmund in the early games of the season, you're thinking, we're very lucky and this isn't going to last. And then there's the PSG game, which is an absolute disaster. You think, oh, well, this is not actually going to be the group of death that people think it is because Dortmund just aren't going to be up to it. But actually, that's not been the case at all. Dortmund not only have been up to it, but yeah, they qualified with the game to spare, which is fantastic. So I do feel, I mean, going back to a bit of the narrative from last time we spoke, that perhaps, you know, there might be a touch of overreaction about Dortmund this season. I don't think they've been quite as bad as all that.
One thing that does come to mind is you mentioned that this was a, you know, the kind of performance out of Dortmund where they acknowledge that they either would prefer not to or simply can't make the game against an opponent like Leverkusen. And so instead, we're happy to sort of, you know, get a fast start, get a goal and sit on it. Do you think that they can take that sort of style forward a little bit? I mean, their next two opponents in, you know, the cup at midweek at Stuttgart and then home to Leipzig in the Bundesliga next weekend. I don't know if those teams are necessarily likely to play along in the way that Leverkusen did with that, but is that perhaps a way for them to sort of hang with the big boys at the moment?
Well, it's an interesting one because my instinct is that Leverkusen being the outstanding team that I think that they felt that they were justified in taking that approach. But I feel that the expectations, and I suspect that culturally, Dortmund don't play like that. You know, they are expected to take the upper hand. And that's one of the reasons why they often struggle is because if there's no discernible identity when they're playing forward, playing on the attack so much, they do tend to get caught out. They have an array of magnificent, talented footballers. So oftentimes, I think systemically, they just don't seem to work when they're going forward. They seem to be happy playing, I think, defensively. But I don't know how easy it's going to be to convince people in and out of the club that that's the way to approach, you know, the bigger games. I mean, as a matter of practical fact, I mean, against Stuttgart, they will need to be cautious against Stuttgart because those guys are just absolutely on fire. They'll just get completely unpicked by Undav, or if it's not Undav, it'll be Guirassy, and so they will need to be cautious. But against Leipzig, I'm not so sure. Against Marco Rose's team, I think people will expect them to go at them. I think it'll be a different thing. But it's an interesting thing to think about.
It's sort of like with Rose, we're also seeing that. I mean, we talked at the start of the season that maybe that Rose fatigue might be hitting Leipzig at some point. And then again, if you look at their current trend, you know, despite playing rather well against City in the Champions League and, yes, qualifying for the next round in the Champions League as well, in total, I think the officials at Leipzig are probably not that happy given where they were at in the league just like 4 or 5 weeks ago.
I wonder, is it worth just maybe dwelling a little bit on Leverkusen because they are the top team in the Bundesliga, and I'm conscious of the fact that we have talked about Dortmund quite a lot, which tends to happen when I'm on here. But what does this say about Leverkusen's season? I mean, how are they going to look upon this? Is this something that they build on and work from there? I mean, what's the feeling there?
I mean, they're probably going to be disappointed that they had, you know, every conceivable stat they won besides crosses hitting the target, I think. So they're probably going to be disappointed that they only got 1 point. But at the end of the day, I think Xabi Alonso and everybody at the club thinks, well, Dortmund actually nearly won the league last season. We managed to get a point. It's not a loss. We can live with that result going forward. And at the end of the day, I mean, you have 3 or 4 top tiny teams that you compete against this season. And the most important thing really is not to lose against those sides, I feel.
Yeah, I would agree. I think that this was a fully functioning Leverkusen on Sunday. It was one that I think on balance probably should have won the game in terms of the chances that they were able to eke out. But that's not always the way things turn out, especially when you get picked off very early, as Leverkusen did. On certain days, even when you create enough chances to score 2, maybe even 3 goals, sometimes you only end up with 1. And I think this was not something that's going to make them lose very much sleep going forward.
Yeah, and I mean, now Bayern actually can get back on top with a win against Union Berlin. But hey, that's not going to happen before January because obviously the Cup is in the way, Champions League is in the way. That match is going to take place then. But what's important until then is that Leverkusen keep winning their matches or at least not losing them going forward.
Yeah.
Well, they've got Patrick Schick back, haven't they? And who seems to have made an instant impact. So that's a massive bonus for them, I think, to come in December, just to play a few games before the winter break.
Really important to get them going, because remember that Victor Boniface is going to the African Cup of Nations.
AFCON, yeah.
Right. Those two teams are actually going to be in action, both of them in the Cup this week, both on Wednesday. I guess if you play on Sunday, you don't have to play again until Wednesday in the Cup. Leverkusen are going to be at home again. They are hosting Paderborn. BVB, as I mentioned a moment ago, they are going down to Stuttgart to play one of their recent nemeses, shall we say. Okay, let's leave that behind. Let's, in fact, leave the first half of the show behind and come back in a moment to talk about further stories from the German top flight. All right, it's part 2 of Talking Fußball, the part where we talk about all the other stories making waves. Okay, I've got a little sort of which way are things going kind of a story, and maybe it also plays into the DFB Pokal, because these two teams are playing each other. I'm talking about Gladbach and Wolfsburg. Gladbach happened to be hosting Wolfsburg on Tuesday in the Cup, and if form is going to tell us anything, Gladbach should really win that game and probably win it with some ease. You know, we've seen Gladbach take some big lumps this season. You know, they were hammered by Cologne in the Rhine Derby. They took a pretty heavy loss to Dortmund, you know, last match day. But truthfully, most of the worst for them has been left behind. I mean, the Foles, they didn't win a game this season until match day six. But since then, in their eight league games since, they've gotten four wins, two draws, and just those two losses I mentioned a moment ago. Beat Hoffenheim this weekend. On the other side of things, Wolfsburg, despite having a really fast start to the season, have kind of sucked lately, I have to say. They lost 3-1 in Bochum, and in fact, since match day six, they haven't managed to beat anybody at all, except for RB Leipzig, oddly enough. They beat Leipzig in the Bundesliga last week. They beat them in the Pokal about a month ago, but they haven't beaten anybody since the end of September, other than Leipzig. Is this a game that y'all are looking forward to? And it's certainly a high-profile matchup, two Bundesliga sides, which is not exactly commonplace in this year's DFB Pokal. And do you expect Gladbach to have the run of things?
Actually, if I've got to pick, if I only had to pick one of those Tuesday matches, I would have picked Homburg against St. Pauli, really, for a lot of other different reasons. But
you're just buttering up Mike Krukemeyer.
Yes, yes, I am indeed. But you know what? I think Gladbach really have found some stability, as I was rather skeptical about their defense and about some of their new signings and about the overall quality of the team. But they have seemingly done enough to establish a mid-table side that can, if they, you know, have a good flow going, can do something at the top parts of mid-table, maybe even 7th or 8th, which must be a relief for Manuel Breuer and Gladbach fans. Wolfsburg, on the other hand side, you know, Niko Kovac is seemingly saying that he doesn't really know what's going wrong, which never is a good thing. If a coach doesn't know what's going wrong, I mean, he told Kicker that, you know what, there were complaints about all the rotations, so I didn't rotate, and that didn't help either. So I don't know what was missing, but everything was really missing from our performance. Which, yeah, if that's where you're at with your team, you look like a guy who might be out of a job soon, if you ask me.
Yeah, I think to tackle Wolfsburg first, Niko Kovac just looks like a guy who's run out of ideas and, you know, maybe feels he has taken them as far as he can take them. I remember he was in an interview with Archie last year, and they were talking about the Premier League, and he went at length to say how much the Premier League was the best league in the world. I was sitting there thinking, oh, there's a come and get me plea, if ever I heard one. I think his stock has dropped to the point now where I'd be surprised even, I think, Crystal Palace would stay away from him.
Crystal Palace have the best coach in the world, so don't worry about it.
They do. But he is retiring at the end of the season.
Again? No, that's not going to last, is it? You know Roy.
So, I mean, it does look as though, you know, that's reaching a natural conclusion, shall we say. And then maybe what they might hang on. Obviously, the cup game is the big game. If it can pluck out a result out of that, maybe get a result on penalties past Gladbach, then that will keep him alive. But you kind of wonder whether or not actually Gladbach win that game, and then maybe that kind of like cements things. Wolfsburg could afford to probably sack Kovac nice and early before the Hinrunde and then have plenty of time for someone to come in. And if I was in Wolfsburg position, I'd be looking at my data and seeing if I can find who the next coach is. I don't mean to be so inhuman, but when it comes to Wolfsburg, you know, they're not a particularly human club, so I don't think... Gladbach, I mean, yeah, I mean, Nick's just really summed that up really well. I mean, Sione is a coach I think we've got a lot of love for and want him to do well. And they're a club that neutrals enjoy watching as well. I don't necessarily think, like Nick, that they're going to be pushing for any kind of European spots unless they win the cup. And, you know.
But what I said was basically if they really got a good, you know, nice flow going with everything going their way, they might be able to push towards the top end of the midsection of the table, which is around 7th.
That sounds about right. Yeah, which on a good year, you could find yourself in a European spot.
Indeed.
Ah, you don't want to go to Europe if you finish 7th in the table. You're going to be too busy the following season.
Changing topics ever so slightly, what I do find exciting about this year's Cup, though, is the fact that Bayern are out of it. Basically, the two best sides in the table are playing each other in this round because VfB play against BVB, as we mentioned in the first segment. So another top four side is going to get eliminated from the cup midweek. And, you know, Gladbach and Wolfsburg are playing each other, which means another Bundesliga side will be out of the cup. Additionally, we've got a lot of, you know, Bundesliga 2 on Bundesliga 2 action in FC Kaiserslautern against Nuremberg, Magdeburg against Düsseldorf. So we got at least two Bundesliga 2 sides moving forward. Three, actually, if you consider Hertha BSC, HSV as well. And additionally, Homburg are playing St. Pauli and Leverkusen are playing against Paderborn. And to add to all of that excitement, you have Saarbrücken, who defeated Bayern, taking on Frankfurt. So, I mean, I think there are an awful lot of Bundesliga clubs right now in, you know, in the vein of Frankfurt, in the vein of Gladbach, thinking, hang on, we actually might have a chance of winning a title this season. And at the same time, St. Pauli, who are away at Homburg, they're probably thinking, if we get, you know, a nice match in the next round, we're just one round away from, you know, actually reaching that final.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, when it comes to the DFB Pokal, you know, for this round is better off on Aufstieg than it is on Talking Fußball. That's not to stop us from talking about it. But yeah, it's a much, much better proposition. The tremendous opportunity for a Bundesliga club to win a piece of silverware, particularly if Stuttgart can get one over Dortmund, only because Dortmund do have some cup-winning pedigree. That is not to say that Dortmund are the favourites. They may well be the favourites to win the Pokal, but they shouldn't be the favourites to win the Pokal. It's just that I think because they've got the pedigree, people might look to them for that. But my goodness me, I think there's a tremendous chance that certainly Stuttgart, you know, but, you know, that's the magic of the cup. They're only one game and they are as easily lost as they are won. So we do have to see. But I mean, we can't rule out the possibility of like a second division team making it into the final. That would be amazing to see. I mean, the international broadcast rights holders won't be too happy, but fuck them. This is the cup.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I think the chances of a Bundesliga 2 side winning the cup have never been higher, like statistically speaking, than this season. But I mean, we've had loads of crazy stories in the cup throughout the years, but it's been a very long time since we last had something along those lines. I mean, Matt, you're a Hertha fan. You probably won't remember this, but Hertha's amateurs actually managed to get to the cup final, whilst Hertha haven't managed to get to the cup final with their first team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That was before my time as a Hertha fan, but it is something that really lives on in club lore. And I think y'all are totally right. I mean, there are more Zweite Bundesliga teams than Erste Bundesliga teams left in the cup at this point. So I just feel like we might even get two. We might even get two second division teams in the final if things continue to stay crazy.
Right now, I think Leverkusen actually favorites to win that cup as well. I mean,
they're favorites to win everything right now.
Yes, that's true. Yeah, they were favorites to win everything. Yeah, I am discounting Leverkusen, but yes.
They probably should have the better of Paderborn. But I, you know, who knows? I mean, suddenly Leverkusen are on an away trip against the winner of, you know, Stuttgart against PVB. And then what?
What would be really on brand for Leverkusen, of course, would be for them to, you know, to lose all three, get to the Europa League final as well, and then lose all three. Just rock that whole 2001 vibe. I think we'd all enjoy that, with the exception of those who wouldn't.
Dang.
Oh, Eric Brühl is sitting in California, crunching his can of Monster and throwing it at the window for, you know, his place of employment.
Well, I mean, I think it's just worth adding, of course, there is the delicious possibility, or even if we really wanted to dream of, obviously, you know, the Stadt Derby as a final.
Ooh.
Hamburg v. St. Pauli. It's on, guys. It could happen. I mean, it probably won't. But wouldn't that be amazing?
Yeah, along with our dreams of, you know, Zweite Bundesliga versus Zweite Bundesliga final, which is, it is a little dicey considering how many matchups are between teams from the same division. But the dream of the Hamburger Stadt Derby does live. Did we get an interesting preview of what that might look like? Just to sort of tease Aufstieg, since it's not your week, Nick, the fact that we had kind of a wild and woolly one?
You know, I mean, the Stadt Derby is absolutely crazy. I mean, it's produced a lot of great storylines over the years. St. Pauli had the better of HSV for a long time, you know, even though St. Pauli used to be sort of like in the higher regions of mid-table, whilst HSV was always pushing for promotion. And St. Pauli, you know, suddenly started winning all of these matches against HSV, ultimately costing them promotion. But, you know, of late, HSV have actually done a little bit better over the last few matches. But this time around, it looked like St. Pauli really had a grip on this one, and especially in the first half. I mean, first, Jackson Irvine gets an early goal, and St. Pauli are flying, and then Hoyer Fernandez just it's one of the most ridiculous own goals. I mean, it's really not a friendly pass he receives from his own defender, but he just goes on hammering it into his own net, the goalkeeper, which sends Sampaoli up 2-0. And, you know, after that, you think, well, this is done and dusted. Sampaoli looks so much better. They have a more clear-cut idea. But hey, it's a Stadt derby. It's at the Milan Tour. And you would expect that Sampaoli are really bossing the second half as well. But then their arch nemesis from the other side of the city come back. And, you know, they get two goals in the space of 2 minutes in the second half. And it really makes for a crazy, exciting, entertaining last half an hour where neither of the teams actually can set that lucky punch. But yeah, I mean, the Stadt derby, it's probably the fiercest rivalry that we have going in German football right about now. I mean, there's no Revere Derby after all happening.
In the Revere Derby's stead, since those two teams are not in the same division anymore, this is truly the best we can do at the moment. And I'm fine with it. This was a wild and woolly, man.
I mean, the German police probably would think, great, another training opportunity before the Euros come along. I know that the German police have been really, really liberal with the use of tear gas and, you know, other commodities of late. Just ask Frankfurt's fans. But yeah, I mean, if we want to get an exciting match, this is probably among the top three matches that the DFB Pokal could produce in its final, if you look at the teams left in the competition.
But it's fair to say, though, guys, it's not been a great weekend for goalkeepers from clubs based in the north of Germany, isn't it?
No, you're probably referring to my friend Michael Zetterer.
Are you guys still friends?
We are. I do forgive. Now, but Michael Zetterer, basically, he got into the vertigo when Jiří Pavlenka got injured, has kept his place ever since. A lot of debate about this because most people consider Pavlenka to be better on the line and Zetterer to be better with the ball at his feet. But this week, his pass really was what led up to that 2-0 goal for Stuttgart, because if you've watched the highlights, you will remember that Stuttgart scored from a penalty, but that penalty came as a result of Zetterer basically passing the ball out onto the right wing, which looks like a giant blunder by the goalkeeper. But after the match, Zetterer says, well, you know, it's not what it seems like, because there were some circumstances outside of my control which really led to that goal. What he goes on saying is that, first of all, everybody on the Stuttgart bench is wearing black jackets, and Stuttgart has a black special kit made for that match. And at the same time as he was playing the pass, Chris Führich is led back onto the pitch by the referee. And Chris Führich is then staying in that place where he placed that ball. Ole Werner comes to the aid of his keeper and tells Kicker after the match, well, if you know football, you know what pass is going to follow. So a referee with a bit of footballing knowledge would have not let the player back onto the pitch. Which is ridiculous, because if you're fit, you're fit. And if the referee has spotted you, he has spotted you, you're allowed back onto the pitch. And hey, you can actually look where you place the ball before placing it.
Yeah, and he was coming in almost as if he was like an entering substitute. He's coming in almost close to the halfway line. A good 40 yards away from the goalkeeper who's going to play it out of the back. It's not exactly like it's, you know, obvious danger zone, despite what Ole Werner thinks about knowing football.
If I'm right, it was a dead ball situation, and Zetterer received the ball. And the moment Zetterer had the ball was in open play. So at that point, the referee goes, right, yep, fine, over you come. If they'd actually not done that, and actually if Zetterer had actually taken the ball from a dead position, he would have been able to have then played the ball in a different way anyway. So it compounds the just error of that. I would fine Ole Werner for those remarks. They're very disrespectful. And I don't think that they're entirely fair. There was no one, there wasn't a Stuttgart player for miles around, you know, when he played that ball. It was, I mean, the worst that would have happened is he would have gone out for a throw-in and he would have still looked foolish. But as it happens, it's, you know, blaming kits. I mean, not even Alex Ferguson gets away with that. So, sorry, dude.
Well, and they're allowed to change kits at halftime if Alex doesn't like him.
I mean, Zetterer basically has two players to aim for. I mean, he's got the midfielder, he's got the right wing back, and, you know, he places it basically in the middle. I mean, these guys are basically 15 yards from one another, and he places it straight bang on into the middle. The Fury stance, and first of all, it's really condescending by Werner to say, if you've played football at a higher level, which, A, Ole Werner hasn't, which, you know, was down to injuries and bad luck. But, you know, you cannot really say that when your job was being a gardener like 12 years ago. It's really like, yes, it sounds condescending, and it's bullshit. I mean, you haven't earned the right to be that condescending, you know, through your actual accomplishments. And second of all, Zetterer should have played a much better pass. I mean, he's not pressured whatsoever, and he's got other options as well. He can go to the other side, he can go upfield, he can do a whole host of things, and he does the possibly worst thing that he possibly could do. You know, if Furious is not allowed back onto the pitch, not a single Werder player has the chance to get to that ball and would have gone out of play, and Stuttgart would have ended up with a throw.
Yeah.
What really strikes me is that this is the sort of bullshit excuse that Werder Bremen tell themselves these days, and, you know, look where they're at. 11 points, 40 matches into the season, and really, the only reason why they're not rock bottom is because there have been a lot of teams that have been really dire this season. I mean, the difference between the top of the table and the bottom of the table is a lot bigger this season than it has been in years prior. So, all in all, I mean, if Werder Bremen, they really look like a relegation side this season. And if you look at the entire year, 2023, I think somebody posted that Werder Bremen have taken 26 points out of a possible 92 from the matches they've played in the Bundesliga in 2023. And yeah, they're basically averaging 0.8 of a point per match in 2023. So if referees allowing players back on the pitch is the biggest problem you can identify with those stats, I think you're in big trouble. And, you know, I just read shortly before we came on that some of the board members at Werder Bremen are questioning whether or not Ole Werner is the right choice going forward. And honestly, after having seen this performance against Stuttgart and hearing those remarks, I can see why.
Okay, that's enough talking foosball for one sitting. Great to be back on with you, Nick.
Great to be back, and yeah, looking forward to the next one, Matt.
Fantabulous. You as well, Terry. Good seeing your shining face.
Yeah, thanks very much for that. Always happy to see people who are happy to see me.
It's so easy to make Terry happy. Thanks again to our producer, Aiden Rantoul. Bis zum nächsten Mal, y'all.